We're back. Jumping the gun. Here we are.
And we're not in studio. I mentioned earlier this week we'd be returning to our traditional format, but we are not. It is summer between July 15th and August 15th, which I always say is, well, anything can happen. Anything can happen. People are out of town. You don't know what's going on. So
we're in a
bar again. And I would say we're on a patio, but we're close to a patio. Just for audio production
reasons.
I'm
feeling the breeze.
Yeah, it's coming. You could feel it. There's some air movement. So one of the lessons I learned actually recording at the bar, in a bar, was you have to be very careful with your audio setup. So we're sitting a bit away from the traffic and everything today, so I don't have such a nightmare when I post-production. But we also have, I feel it's apropos to call him a friend of the program now, because we have Mickey.
Yay.
Falk. Yeah.
Mickey, thank you.
Mickey is joining us again. He is spending a little bit of summer in Vancouver.
Always. Yeah. Every summer, and a portion of the summer.
So we're lucky enough that he's agreed to join us for the podcast, spend a little bit of his massive wisdom for us and a few insights.
Right.
So we'll be talking about that. There is quite a bit of news on the macro front, though, so we will get into that a little bit first, and Mickey might chime in a little bit on the U.S. economic numbers. Being from New Mexico and everything, we love to get the American angle on that.
I'm not sure New Mexico is actually part of the U.S.
Yeah.
Some people think it is not.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly.
You know,
totally
it certainly
depend.
Is the 49th state.
The 49th state.
Among 50 in all economic parameters.
There we go. So we,
well,
also
we always beat. We always beat out Mississippi.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go. There you go. And Texas wants to leave but can't. So there, right.
No, there's a saying: "Poor New Mexico, so close to Texas, so far from heaven."
Oh, there you go. That's a great quote. Well, the reason we're talking about this is because gold made a significant move today. In the, I guess a lot of people would say, in the wrong direction. We saw a bit of a drop off to we're at $1,336 per ounce, which is not as, I mean, for gold bugs, I mean, I've heard some guys calling $2,000 gold by the end of the year now. So that's kind of putting a little damper on their
that's not going to slow them down.
Yeah, no, that won't slow them down. Right? So the reason behind this is, we had a pretty strong U.S. job number come out, I guess, yesterday, early this morning. Just to touch on it, it's non-farm payrolls rose by 255,000 jobs, which is the second month in a row of really strong job growth in the U.S. So as we know, and anyone who's in gold will tell you, if the U.S. economy performs well, gold tends to go down. So as we've been watching, so it's been a bit of a seesaw. So I'm sure the Federal Open Market Committee, who we talk about on a regular basis, will come out tomorrow and say they're going to raise interest rates next month, and then we'll see what happens, right? Meanwhile, Canada's economy is terrible. So they put out a little bit of a really poor jobs update. So while the U.S. is overperforming analyst estimates, Canada proceeds to severely underperform. So our dollar went down to, what was it, 75 cents today? I think we closed that again. So all in all, a lot of crazy macroeconomic things are going on. The Bank of England announced more stimulus measures, so they don't look that good. They look like their economy's after the Brexit, so that may go up. Then the U.S. job numbers may go back down. So we're playing, I don't even know. It's not a very fun game for anybody, though. So that's what was happening in the macro on gold. You might have noticed a little bit of a tank off today. Silver has been flat, I don't know, for 2 months now, or it's been at $20 for a significant amount of time. Mickey, do you have the number on you?
Yeah, you're right. It's been at $20 more or less since the 1st of July.
And so it's, again, $19.71 per ounce, so it hasn't moved. Copper took a slight tick off, but it's been between $2.15 and $2.20 for around the same amount of time, probably around 6 to 8 weeks. So
copper's in backwardation again, near term, so
that
probably accounts for the weakness right now.
Right now, yeah, and there's also some banks putting out some fairly bearish reports on copper oversupply coming up. I think I saw one from JP Morgan, who's always bad about that, but then a few other banks have been saying we're headed for a big supply deficit, or oversupply. So that's where our commodities sit. There is a lot of random midsummer economic news coming out of the central bank, so that's why your metals might be moving in your poor gold portfolio.
Well, I'd also comment that oil went below $40 again on Monday. Now it bounced pretty good immediately, but close a little less than 42.
Yeah.
Feeling there is that there are a bunch of short positions that got closed out on profits. So probably the oil situation looks a little better going forward. But once again, you know, we got this fears of a glut. And, you know, there's record year in gasoline demand in the U.S. And yet gasoline in storage is the highest it's been in 20-some-odd years.
It's a funny art market. I personally, were I a active player, I would be long oil right now at $40. But it just seems logical to me that everything I've read over the midterm is pretty positive on oil. I won't say anything about the poor coal guys. I mean,
another issue on oil right now is it is strongly in contango for 6 months out, which means now people can park it offshore and still make a profit on it. So that could affect the supply-demand equation going forward.
For sure. So it's interesting. So, yeah, so that's we're sitting with WTI right there. So probably better at the pump, but maybe not so good for your oil investments. So that's where we are this week. So we wanted to welcome Leslie back. Leslie hasn't – we've both kind of been out of town for a while. As I mentioned last week, I was on vacation, but Leslie's been working. So thank you for picking up the slack in my apps.
Well, I've just been like running around all over the place.
Do you really call that work?
I don't know.
It's like field trips.
It never really feels like work that much. I got to see some beautiful sights, meet some incredible people.
So why don't you give us a rundown?
Where I've been.
I think all the listenership
knows. I don't
even
know where I'm at right now.
From the Yukon forward. So, because you've been to a lot of places since...
Yeah.
You were last on the show, I guess, right? Since we last ran a full podcast. So
I know.
Yeah, let's
Well, we
let's
had
hear
the Yukon, obviously, going up there, and you and I were both smashing that out.
Yeah.
That was a lot of good fun.
Yeah.
After that, I went over to visit Great Panther Silver down in Guanajuato, Mexico, which happens
lovely,
to also...
Lovely place, Guanajuato.
You know, it's a World UNESCO Heritage Site. Like, it was the most incredible thing. Mining there dates back to the 1600s. It's like walking into Spain. All the wealth that these miners got out of the ground, they dumped into churches and buildings and architecture, and it's just the most spectacular place. And I think they probably did it because they thought they were going to go to heaven for doing it. So nowadays we don't really see mining companies building churches so much. But realistically, that was a kind of a neat operation to see. We went into their site office where they were doing the milling, and it was right in the center of the city. I thought I was going to the hotel.
I've been to Guanajuato a couple of times.
Yeah,
isn't the operation
it
some
is
of it
right
under,
in the middle of the town?
Some of the underground
it's
workings.
All under,
under the town. Yeah,
it's all under, and so they got like San Ignacio going on. They've got the Topia. Sorry, they've got that operation going too. That's a little bit outside of town, and we visited both of them. They had some issues, obviously, a couple of years ago with like basically some illegal miners came in and overthrew the whole operation when the silver price was going up, but they've rectified that now, and they've got armed guards, and everything seems to be like pretty good. They've got
Sounds
some solid
like Mexico.
CSR initiatives going on, and it just seemed like a really good group when I was down there with them that really cared a lot about what they were doing and the kind of jobs that they're providing for the people there. So they seem to be doing really well. Topia is like really kind of boosting them along.
Now, they were one of the companies that stayed in production when silver went to $15. Right?
Yeah.
So when you're down there, did you get a sense from them that the move towards $20 silver had changed anything for them operationally? Was there more economic ore? Were they doing more drilling? Like,
have they
changed anything for them at all?
Or? Well, I asked Bob Archer about that. I said, you know, if we're going to see gold or silver go back up, are you going to start seeing illegal miners coming through?
Coming back again, yeah.
And he says no, because I guess like now that they've had that issue, they've all learned from it, and they've got the state on their side, and everyone's kind of aware of what can happen and how to like mitigate a situation like that. So there's a better understanding because we all learn from mistakes and events that happen.
Well, you
in
hope
the past.
You learn.
You hope so. Yeah.
I know. So,
sometimes
yeah.
it takes more than one mistake, but we do pick it up eventually. Yeah.
Right.
I wish I'd looked up their quarterly results before the show. I'm actually just doing that right now.
Yeah, they actually just came out.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
But are they drilling there, or is it? Because I remember I talked to them maybe last year, and there was some promising sort of blue sky targets they had around Guanajuato.
It's
but
Guanajuato.
I don't know.
There's always blue sky. Yeah. That system just goes on forever.
But did they? So they there were no drills when you were there? They weren't like
no one was drilling. Just mining
I had to look up their quarterlies because I just wanted to see what the operating results were. So they had a drop in silver equivalent prediction, not very much. It was basically flat at about 1 million ounces equivalent, which was composed of about 500,000 ounces silver and 6,000 ounces gold. But their ASIC, all-in sustaining, dropped 43% to U.S. $7.19
yeah, really
per
wow,
payable ounce of silver. That's pretty good. So I don't know. I'd have to dig into what exactly they did to if it's just metal prices or whether they've been doing something as far as their mine sequence is concerned or something like that to improve that. I don't know if they're high-grading the thing or what they're doing down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, who knows?
But all in really sustaining
yeah, yeah.
More or less, what, $7, $8
$8
an ounce.
Yeah.
So. You know, we all, or I know, and I'll say it for our listeners.
Yeah, is, yeah, you gotta always got to feel
all in sustaining costs yeah. is not all in cost by
no.
any stretch of
no.
imagination.
No, no, no.
But you can kind of use a rule of thumb on that.
Add a few
in
dollars.
In a well run company, an all in sustaining cost, you add another maybe 30 to 40% of that, and that's going to be the real cost of mining
of
the
mining.
Metal.
The cost of mining.
The
yeah,
cost
exactly.
of mining.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And
nobody actually publishes that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I, you know,
yeah,
well
yeah,
the we, companies don't.
No.
But, you know, I did a, here's a little plug. About a year and a half ago, we did this thing called The Real Cost of Mining Gold and looked at seven gold miners and showed why and how they weren't profitable in the greatest bull market for gold we ever had from 2003 to 2014.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's all these non-GAAP accounting measures mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. allows them to hide all this stuff
yeah,
till
yeah.
they have
around.
To write it down. It yeah. only shows up on a balance or the
financials
statements yeah. as depreciation and amortization mm-hmm. until they write it all off. So
yeah.
No, anyway,
but
that's
right?
a good, yeah, yeah, that's a really, I mean, that's a pretty robust number.
Oh, yeah.
With a silver price at $20.
Oh, it's solid.
You know,
and I was
that,
like, my
that,
first,
they ought to be making money hand over fist
well,
right
the first
now.
Thing I look at is how much gold they're producing, because they're obviously the gold, the if they qualified as a byproduct. Do you want to know? If they qualify, I mean, if that works in, then if they're producing enough gold, you know, is it a gold or a silver mine? At which point do you switch it, but they didn't produce that much gold, so it's a,
yeah.
it's not that much of a, not
it
that
does,
much.
Yeah, and the other thing that silver helping. Companies, and I'm not going to pick out
don't
Great Panther for doing
yeah.
doing this, I because I don't really know, but sometimes they do gold silver equivalents, mm-hmm. and they calculate a gold silver equivalent, and they'll use the ratio of the price, but that's not the right way to do it
no.
because
no.
you've got different recoveries on your gold and silver.
You should do it on, yeah.
especially yeah. in heap leach. You need to
right.
do it on
yeah.
recoveries.
Yeah.
And the companies that are really egregious in that are the polymetallic
oh,
companies
God.
Where they got to send this stuff to a smelter.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
see
yeah.
them do resources and reserves based on prices.
We just had this conversation
yeah,
yesterday.
We did.
So,
yeah.
So, no, but keep on. Go on.
No,
yeah,
okay.
We don't have it on the record.
This yet,
because
so.
This is about NSRs as far
yeah,
as,
so,
as NSRs go.
So,
Nicky's got some
you
good,
know,
good
if you're going to do a gold equivalent or a silver equivalent or a copper equivalent, you can't do it based on even your mineral estimates, resources, your resource estimates. You should not do that in a polymetallic setting
yeah.
on current prices of the metal, because that's meaningless. What you've got to do
yeah.
is
yeah.
you take your recovery from the mill, and then you get your net smelter return, which is oftentimes has not a whole lot to do with your recoveries, and you apply those factors, and then you can calculate a copper equivalent or a gold equivalent or
exactly.
silver
yeah,
equivalent.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the companies do not do that.
I will add, Leslie's familiar with my ranting on discount rates on the program, and
oh,
Mickey
yeah.
Yeah.
fully agrees.
I think every single one of our podcast listeners are familiar with your ranting.
Yeah, yeah. The he likes a 10% minimum.
Oh my God!
I was nicer.
I'm gonna sit
it's, it
you.
Should be the cost of capital.
Yeah,
what's the
yeah,
cost
yeah.
of capital?
It's not
Did
five.
We have this discussion yesterday?
Yeah, we were having. This discussion.
Or somebody was saying
no, was
the
me.
Only
yeah,
only
me.
Way that you can run a 5% discount. I think it was you.
Yeah, it was me.
Is
was
if
it.
You have a gold loan.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
who's
yeah.
doing gold loans
yeah.
anymore? Well,
yeah.
there was a gold loan done
today.
Today, essentially, or
yeah.
yesterday.
Mm-hmm. You guys are just going to have to arm wrestle it out.
But gold loans.
No, we agree. We agree.
No,
yeah,
we
yeah,
agree.
Yeah. But speaking of drilling and exploration and delineation, Leslie's other visit was to Integra.
Oh, man.
So you went to Lamaque, which is...
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is getting absolutely, like, an enormous amount of institutional money pumped into it. So they brought how many analysts did they bring out?
Okay, so
50.
No, it was 50?
80. 80.
There was 80.
Oh man, that's bigger than the Hathor tour I was on right before they got taken out.
There was like the whole airport was like full of just analysts, and there was only like a handful of writers, and I was like the only non-newsletter writer there. So it was incredible. You know, and for me going
out to check out private jet.
Oh yeah. We had a private jet. We had everything.
Those guys are promotional masters.
Herding cats and everything. We had our own group leaders and had flags we had to follow. Not quite like that, but regardless, it was super cool because going to the Abitibi for me as a geologist.
Was that the first time?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It was basically like seeing your most favorite like rock band perform ever. Because, you know, I grew up as a young
geologist.
Have
you not been to the Carlin trend? Come on.
I'm a gold bug. I love sheer hosted gold. You know, structural geology really jazzes me.
Yeah.
So, you know, learning about this stuff in university and then finally seeing it for the first time, I was just like, you know, front row and center screaming, asking for autographs.
From the rocks.
From the rocks.
Yeah, yeah. Leslie, stop pocketing all the rocks.
Yeah. And
you
it was
see
cool.
lots of fish hooks?
Fish hooks.
You know fish hooks.
No.
We got geology.
Transposed layering.
Oh, you're talking about drag folds or something?
Well, it's where they shear off the nose.
Yeah,
of the
they
pole.
Shear off. And
yeah,
they
yeah.
Fish
and so you
right.
develop
yeah, yeah.
what's called a pseudostratigraphy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
It's so
I've never heard of the whole thing.
I've never
heard
of the whole
thing.
This
is advanced structural geology.
This is
what
geologists
take in graduate school to learn about deformed rocks.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's key.
And we call them fish hooks because they're
basically shaped just like that.
They're
tight
folds, meaning the hinges are nearly parallel, and then they shear off the axial plane, and you end up with something that looks like a fish hook.
Oh man, Mickey, you're my most favorite person.
Well,
you know
should
that?
Just
read. You today?
Should. I should just next time I come up here, I'll bring my copy of Hobbes, Means, and Williams.
Oh, dude, I have a copy.
I
in my
know,
apartment.
Oh well, go and read about transposition layering.
Thank you
Do
so
it.
Much. I love
there
you, Mickey.
Go.
I love transposition layering. People always get so confused. Like it's betting. I'm like, it's not betting. It's transpose. You're in a shear zone. Anyway, I can't even.
This is way too much.
So
no, trust me. We're the Northern Miner. Somebody will love it. Somebody will love it. And what we bring to this show is balance. So I'll bring the finance side and Leslie.
Sorry, I got you off track.
This is my bread and butter.
But I will ask you about Integra. Is that they had that big competition at PDAC that was really highly publicized.
Yeah.
And B, I don't know what's their drill budget this year. It's enormous again.
It's huge.
50 million somewhere.
Oh God,
how many
meters? I know that they're testing one Gold Rush target.
My question
is the Lamac deep target is 10,000 meters from one single drill hole. So they're going to basically drill a kilometer deep hole and then they're going to parent.
I will say, I have stories about Lamac deep from tech. That
yes, they drilled that.
They chased the hell out of that thing for a long time. And I know some geos who worked on that for a long time.
They
couldn't figure it out.
They went at it from the wrong angle, though.
Well, they said, best of luck to you. We worked on that. Good structural geologists that work for tech.
Mm.
And they were like, good luck with it.
Mm.
But they like old guys. They're like 75 now.
Yeah,
it's almost
like fly fishing.
It is.
You know,
hey,
the older you get, the more rocks. It's like the person who sees more rocks win.
Big program. Everybody knows the project fairly well. They're really trying to find...
Well, they've got triangle.
Enough mineable ounces.
Yeah, right now is that they've got triangle and they've been following these shear zones at depth and finding more and more of it.
Yeah.
But they're going to be increasing that resource, updating that resource pretty soon. But they're also focusing on plug number 4, which is like 500 meters just right next by. And so the premise there is that the structures go all the way through triangle and into number 4 plug. Now, when we were looking at the maps, it looks like there is some structure going on between the two. And the structures at number 4 plug slightly a bit rotated, but not a big deal. It doesn't really matter because the gold is gold and it's going to be there regardless. But they're focusing on bringing up the resources at number 4 because it is a nice complement to triangle in terms of like beefing up the operation.
Mill feed,
totally, yeah, and more bulk mineable sort of targets.
It's closer to surface or is it?
Yeah.
Deeper?
It's a little different for the Abitibi in the fact that it's got copper and gold, right?
It's got a really sweet target just like pretty much in town.
Is that the
as
one in
well,
the swamp?
From the Gold Rush. No, it's like there's a Buick car place on top of it. I swear to God.
That does not sound.
Buick, that's a good name.
Yeah.
I have an old Buick. I have a 61 Buick in my yard.
There you
so.
Go. Yeah.
But
drill under it.
We wanted to get into. There you go. Under your car. Oh, no.
Well, I have to. I do have to say that I've got the world's highest grade soil anomaly in my yard, which is underneath the pile of rocks that I've accumulated over 40 years.
There you go.
You know, hand-sized specimens, and they just go into a rock pile, and there's every metal known to man in that thing, and high-grade stuff, too.
I'm sure that will all make it work.
So, we're nearing the end of the show, but I must, for a moment, touch into our Yukon sponsorship.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Would love to mention the Yukon Mining Alliance, and we do thank them so much for sponsoring the show.
We thank you guys so much.
And just a quick... We like to slide in a little piece of Yukon news. What's happening up there today? We're all familiar with Banyan Gold.
Banyan?
Yeah.
It's raising money.
The Highland Project raised some money. They just released a new technical report on the project today. So it's been filed today.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah,
I saw they were raising money yesterday, but I didn't see that.
And they also appointed Tara Christie, who we all know. She's a key figure in the Yukon, big plastic.
She's
the Christies
awesome.
Are a big,
I had a big
but
old
she's
gab
the president and CEO now. So she's, congratulations.
Good. Congrats to Tara there.
Yeah, so there's a new, if anyone's interested in Highland, do either of you guys want to give a little pitch on the potential geology up there?
Because I've looked at the project, not on the ground, but with Tara and Mark Aranto and Paul Gray, who's there. Chief geologist, smart guy.
Yeah.
And it has some similarities to Carlin-type deposits. They like to compare it to Marigold, which is right on the highway between Winnemucca and Battle Mountain and a mine's been in production for, how long? 30? No, this is Marigold.
Oh, Marigold.
Cordex mine.
Oh, gosh.
Santa Fe Mining, who I worked for in the mid-80s.
Silver Standard just bought it.
Silver Standard just bought this. So they like to compare it to Marigold. I haven't seen the rocks. I've seen pictures of the rocks, but it is broadly a Carlin-type system.
That's what they're
looking for.
about what
I know about it.
Yeah, so interesting. So, yeah.
You know, and they've got a long structure, and we'll see.
So do take a look at Banyan. And technical report just filed. So if you want to dig into it a little bit more on the technical side, just head over to CBAR. You can grab their stuff. And just to conclude the show, Mickey made a bunch of notes on gold quarterlies, because we had a conversation yesterday and we were talking about majors. So Goldcorp, Kinross, Barrick, and Agnico. And he just had some quick hits that he wanted to share with us.
Well, I've already shared one of them. That was about all-in sustaining costs.
ASICs,
And you look at Barrick, they're trying to reduce debt. They're trying to sell Kalgoorlie.
Yeah.
But this is what stood out with me with Barrick. If you take their quarterly production, you analyze that, it's multiplied by 5.4 million ounces of gold projected this year. I don't know what their guidance was. I just took Q2 production, multiplied it times 4.
Yeah.
That's down from 9.1 million ounces in 2011. And it goes back to the whole point about gold mining is a value, not a growth industry. Agnico Eagle turned in a pretty good quarter. Here's the thing that struck me about them. 10% dividend over the quarter. Multiply that by 4.
Yeah.
That's a 0.5% yield on the dividend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, not very many companies get away, outside the gold mining business with such a skimpy little dividend.
Goldcorp,
annual production down 27% from its high in 2011.
And they're also
a couple of troubled mines.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
Cerro Negro
and
Peñasquito. But the corporate guidance is kind of going on the idea that the kind of the saving grace maybe is increased production at Penasquito.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
I always thought they kind of wanted to get out of that area.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Right? And then finally, Kinross lost 1 cent a share.
Yeah. Yeah.
With an all-in sustaining cost. So.
Yeah, this is weird.
$976
right.
an ounce. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's assume
that
in Q2, the average price they sold gold for was $1,200.
Yep.
So once again, all-in sustaining costs are not the real cost
it doesn't,
of mining
I'm making the weight
gold.
Motion. It doesn't make sense, right?
Well, it makes sense
it does.
When you go through the financial statements and figure out how they're really doing this. It's just a cautionary thing. It used to be all about cash costs, and that didn't work, and that became enough people beat that idea
into the ground.
The gold miners, the 10 largest gold miners in the world, got together and they cobbled together this thing all in sustaining costs. But once again, that does not tell the whole story on profitability of a gold mining
company. Like what do we call it? Cost of mining gold. The cost of an ounce of mining gold.
Yeah, the real cost of mining gold.
Yeah.
Plug for me and Cypher Research.
There you go.
Go to our website.
Yeah.
Watch the videos.
Yeah.
Read the musing. It's
we should
bit
just turn
deep.
That into an acronym.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the deal. Mining's a really hard business.
It is. Yeah.
It's a tough business.
Yeah.
And it's probably why I am much more in tune to buying and speculating in explorers and advanced explorers versus gold miners.
Right. Well,
but I'm a geologist. I'm not a mine engineer.
There's going to be some angry
find someplace else to put drill holes.
There's going
to
be some angry mining engineer who phones me like, you need to get a mining engineer on your show.
No, I love mining engineers. Yeah. You know, I have I essentially have a degree in geological engineering.
Yeah.
I was an engineering major for 3 years in college.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, nothing wrong
but
with engineers.
But you still know your transposition, Mickey.
and that is a great place to end our show. This has been a phenomenal episode. We are live on location in downtown Vancouver. We're recording live.
Recording.
I've been told I can say that. We're recording live on location in downtown Vancouver. This has been the Northern Miner Podcast. I am Matthew Keeble with my co-host Leslie Stoke and our very special guest.
And I'd like to give props to Yukon Mining Alliance and Yukon government for sending me to a wonderful field trip. I saw eight projects in Yukon about 3 weeks ago, and it was just great.
Mickey Fulp. Thanks, everybody.